Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory number 66. Our special year-end music edition of the show. Still in the works. Going to be coming within the next few weeks here as we talk about Grammy nominations. Silk Sonic doing well with Leave the Door Open. I believe they got 4 nominations. Thrilled about that. That was probably my favorite, if not second favorite, song of the year. I still think SZA's Good Days, which is up there for song of the year, is going to be contending as well in my mind for that award. It's actually a pretty crowded, tough Big Four category, including Best New Artist, where I lean Baby Keem, but could see others getting involved there as well. I'm excited to break that all down with Mel Smith. Maybe Anthony Obas will come on and talk Day in Vegas with us. We were out there a couple weeks ago when the festival went off without Travis Scott in the aftermath of that debacle. I just watched a video on the Washington Post breaking down just physically how daunting of a crowd movement and like square feet per person, like how packed it was there. It was just a pretty unbelievable breakdown. A couple things I'm looking to watch within the couple of weeks here. I know DMX documentary just came out. Excited to watch that. New movies like King Richard, I heard, is really good. As well as a new Disney movie. So we're going to get into some of that through the holiday season. Still doing these NBA team previews. We're going to have our friend Noah, new friend of the show, Noah, who covers the Spurs for Pounding the Rock, joining us. He's going to talk about the Spurs, where they're going, what they've done these last couple of years, and just the wall that they've hit. He also hosts the Alamo City Limits podcast. We're going to try to come to a deal between the Celtics and Spurs by the end of the show, because I do think there's a number of players on the Spurs who could help the Celtics. And Celtics fans have been dreaming of DeJounte Murray for years with the TPEs. So stay tuned for that. See if we did ultimately come to a deal here. In the meantime, hope you all had a happy Thanksgiving. Enjoying the coverage over the last week or so here. Big Celtics homestand. A tiring one, but we got through it. We put out a ton of good stuff on Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, the state of this team, the league's assessment that the Celtics are stuck in neutral. Celtics postgame show has been awesome here as the team continues to roll on its 500 pace and hits a weekend where they can start to build a few games above 500 here before a pretty daunting matchup with the 76ers on Wednesday, which we'll be in the house for, as well as the month ahead that's going to carry a West Coast trip, another Lakers game, a Clippers game, Suns, who look like one of the best teams in the NBA. And also, by the time you hear this, NBA Notebook will be out this week talking Grant Williams, his improvement, which I've actually been reasonably impressed with. So check that out. And that's about it. Other good stuff going on the network. Check out Sherrod, Joe Sway with Causeway Street, Cedric Maxwell podcast, all the great podcasts that you've come and know to love here on CLNS Media, as well as Dome Theory, which you can watch live when we stream with our guests every week on the CLNS Media YouTube, as well as the Celtics All Access page. And of course, always showing us love, and we are returning it. BetOnline.ag. It was a great Thanksgiving with BetOnline. Lions getting some points with a good opportunity against Andy Dalton and the Bears, who have just been swooning to get a cover. Didn't get their first win. They're 0-10-1 now, but they did cover. Raiders getting a ton of points. Came out, blew a lead, ended up winning in overtime, but 7.5, more than enough for the second underdog of the day to cover. And then Bills against Trevor Siemian and the Saints. Cover with ease, with their offense opening up again in a big primetime matchup. Pretty good three-team parlay potential there. It really was. I didn't end up betting any of those games. A little too scared to be feeling down on Thanksgiving off some lost bets. But I do, when I get a strong feeling, regularly use betonline.ag. And football is what you want to bet on. Go to the new site, scroll down that left-handed side to football, NFL, NFL football games, and there are still plenty of great ones to bet this weekend. Patriots -7 against the Titans at home. Love the way New England's playing. I don't think Tennessee has enough firepower after losing to Houston and Derrick Henry going down for the season. That's one of the games I love this weekend. Jets +2.5 at the Texans. You can give me the Jets. Eagles, Giants. I do like the Eagles. They've been rolling. Don't get as good of an odds if you're picking them, but 3.5, I do think that they can cover against the Giants. Buccaneers, Colts. Let me go Colts with the run game that they're establishing. Their defense, one of the best passing defenses in the league. Run defenses, rather. I think they're going to be able to really keep this close with Tampa at home. Falcons, Jaguars. Stay away. -2 Falcons. I'm staying away from that one. Panthers, Dolphins. Give me Dolphins +2.5. One of my two locks of the week with the Patriots. Piling up the front seven against Cam. Really going all in on the run game. And I do think at home they're going to have a good chance to win that game. Steelers, Bengals. Give me the Bengals -3.5. Way they're running the ball. The way Steelers defense is banged up right now. I like the favorites there. Chargers, Broncos. I will stay away from the AFC West mayhem. +3 of the Broncos at home, though. Vikings, 49ers. Give me the Vikings +3. Love the way they're playing. Better odds, too. Rams, Packers. Packers +1. I will take it. Plus odds. Picking the Packers at home against the Rams. Give it to me. And Ravens, Browns to cap off the night. I will stay away from that one with Lamar's status uncertain. Then a pick'em, Seahawks and the team on Monday night. So awesome week to bet. Thanksgiving is in the rearview mirror, but BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the sports action. Head to their new updated desktop mobile site. It's so awesome. Like ever since they made that change, I've just been going on BetOnline so much more often. CLNS50, still the code. New site, old code, CLNS50, 50% welcome bonus. You put in 100, 50% means $50 coming back to you to bet on college hoops, pro hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, even your favorite Vegas casino games. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, we're stuffed with deals this Thanksgiving. And I, of course, I'm keeping tabs on my over-under picks. Getting a little bit more shaky with the Bucks improving and the Nets getting on a roll here and some of these under teams at the bottom starting to win a few too many early in the schedule. So I'll keep you updated there over on the Dome Theory Twitter account, as well as shout out any lines I'm loving on any given day on BetOnline. So thanks to BetOnline. Thank you for listening. And we now turn it over to Noah Magaro George, N_MAGARO. Noah Magaro George, who covers the Spurs for Pounding the Rock. Go check him out, and we will talk to him right now. Bobby Manning here. Welcome to Dome Theory, number 66, I believe it is. Yep, we are to 66. We're about 20 games into the season when we figure out who's who in this NBA. I think it's going to take a little bit longer this year, and we're going to start to sort it out a little bit here with Noah Magaro George of Pounding the Rock, covers the Spurs down in San Antonio, who are going to be playing the Celtics tonight. And I wanted to do a Nets-Celtics episode this week, didn't end up coming together with Thanksgiving going on, and I hope everybody does have a good Thanksgiving. Obviously, a lot of Celtics and Nets parallels. More Celtics and Spurs parallels than I think people imagine coming into this one. So I'm excited to kick this one around with Noah and learn a little bit about him, too. What's up, Noah?
Not much, just here to talk to you about the Spurs, about the Celtics, really excited about this game. Not so sure the Spurs are going to win it, but I'm enjoying every game as it comes, so I appreciate you having me.
So I saw on your Twitter feed within the last few days that you're calling this a rebuild in San Antonio. Is that your assertion, or do you think that's kind of how the team is, after a couple of mediocre years, starting to look at things now?
Yeah, I think that's what I would label it. I'm not 100% sure that the Spurs front office would label that, because you have a guy like Greg Popovich, who every year his goal is to try to win as many games as possible. And you know what? They're not winning a lot of games right now, but that's not because they're not trying. But if you look at who's on the roster, the way it's constructed, the way that they're playing, who's getting to play, it's pretty clear to me that it is a rebuild. And it's year one of a rebuild that probably should have happened a few years ago, but at least they're committing to it right now.
Yeah, for sure. And Noah covers the Spurs, Pounding the Rock, Alamo City Limits podcast, a bunch of different places you can find him talking about Spurs basketball. How'd you come to cover the Spurs?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in San Antonio, was a Spurs fan my whole life, and one thing led to another, and I finished college, and I went, you know what, I really want to cover this team. It wasn't the first thing that was on my mind, but I went, you know what, I love Spurs basketball, I love NBA basketball, I want to do this, so when the pandemic sort of started. I know that this is probably maybe not the best time to start a new career, but I was like, hey, I really want to commit to this. I want to go all in. I want to give it all my resources, all my time. And that's what I've done. And one thing led to another. And suddenly I had a YouTube channel. Suddenly I was on a verified platform. Suddenly I was verified and, you know, still working towards a full-time job. But right now, it basically is, you know, I've committed to it full-time. So really happy to be doing it. And I feel fortunate that, you know, there's enough people who care about what I have to say about the Spurs that I'm in this position to do so.
So Pop is Pop's interesting as a figure to cover, from what I've seen. Obviously, he was at the head of the Olympic team this year, and I know he's probably going to be heading to the podium within an hour here as we speak. And I look at some of these interviews he does just to kind of see what he's saying, or you know, anything going on around the Spurs. And he'll do like, you know, 2-minute pressers where like someone will ask him, you know, how important is this game tonight, and he'll go, very important. And that's just kind of who Pop is as this figure. I've seen him give some good answers too, but he's not going to give you anything easy as a reporter. I don't know if you're in on these interviews or have asked him a question before or anything like that, but I do find it very interesting how he challenges the reporters in the room per se.
For sure. I first got my first opportunity to ask him a question last year during the Olympics, but I've been sitting in on the press conferences, or at least most of the pre and post game press conferences, for about the last year. And it's intimidating. You know, he doesn't like to talk that much. Spurs PR has everything wrapped up pretty tight. So if he only wants to talk a minute, he's only going to talk a minute. And if he doesn't like the questions that are being asked, he's probably going to give you a short answer. Or if he thinks it's a dumb question, he'll probably belittle you a little bit. But I think it helps you grow as a reporter, you know, ask better questions, ask questions that aren't so obvious. You know, occasionally you get a reporter in there who goes, you know, what did you do wrong tonight? And it's like, okay, well, I'm sure they did several things wrong. So you got to be a little bit more specific with Pop to really get him to answer a question. But I've appreciated it. And honestly, from what I can tell, he's sort of eased up over the last couple of years. You know, it's a different Pop than we've seen since probably about 2016, 2017. He's eased up a little bit. So I appreciate that. And I know the first time I asked him a question, I was nervous, but he was very nice to me. And I think a little bit of it had to do was they were winning a lot of games at the Olympics this summer. So happy he got that gold medal, and happy he was nice to me during those press conferences.
Yeah, and he's obviously had some iconic moments talking about social issues over the last couple of years. Very long and in-depth and passionate answers about, you know, some of the police shootings over the last couple of years, and protests and politics going on in the country. And I do think kind of reveal a little bit about his passion, his ability to, you know, put a message out there and not just completely blow off the media. So you get a mixed bag from Pop for sure. I do think what some people are going to find interesting coming in this matchup is sort of that history between Ime Udoka heading the Celtics for the first time this year and Popovich, who was obviously his mentor. I find a number of things interesting about Udoka and covering him for the first season here. He's obviously someone who's going to go quite a bit into his criticism of his own players, challenge them publicly. I think he has a flexibility to his play style that reflects Popovich a little bit. And at the same time, I do think you be able to have longer conversations with him about game plans and things of that nature than Pop has this many years into his career. Maybe Udoka changes after a couple of years of dealing with the media and things of that sort. But the parallels between them are really interesting to me. I do think Udoka brings so many of Pop's emphases to the table in Boston, whether it's ball movement, defensive first identity, different things like that. I don't know if you've gotten to watch a ton of Celtics this year, but those are some of the staples I'd imagine that Popovich is stressing to a younger team at the same time.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to watch too many Celtics games, just the ones that are on national television. But yeah, it does seem that Ime Udoka likes to stress ball movement, like you said, defense commitment. And Popovich has sort of gone back towards those things after, you know, a DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge led era where, you know, there were a lot of post-ups, there was a lot of isolation ball there. And, you know, they always still move the ball pretty well, even when those guys were there, but without guys who are alphas, without guys who can give the ball and say, hey, go get me a bucket really on this team. They've had to move the ball around, right? So the Spurs have changed their identity from a team that was one of the worst defenses in the league to this year, they're more active. I don't know that it has really resulted in all that better of a defense. I believe they're, you know, like 25th or 26th in points allowed per game this year. They've struggled at times, especially defending the three-point line, but I think they've been better defensively. Like, they have the personnel to be good, from DeJounte Murray to Derek White to, you know, Devin Vassell. In theory, guys like Lonnie Walker and Keldon Johnson, who they have all the athletic tools in the world, but maybe they don't have it all put together quite yet. Jakob Poeltl's a great rim protector. So they have the personnel. I think it's just figuring out how to play them together. But I'm really interested to see what Boston does. If I could ask you a question, how are they looking defensively this season? Because, I mean, I only have like a 2-3 game sample size from games I've seen on television. You know, who's their alpha on that end, and who are some of the players that really make plays for them, who stop the other team's best scores?
Yeah, I believe in their defense. I do. And it started rough this year. I think they were in the bottom half, maybe even bottom five through the first couple of games this year. Put out an awkward, switch-heavy lineup. I know Bob Vulgaris, who was on the Bill Simmons podcast there, said that they end up in cross matches about 60% of their possessions. Zach Lowe has talked about just how often they switch as well. They switch almost everything. And they've lightened it a little bit. It was extreme to start the year. I think they've mixed in some drop, some zones, some other things to give teams looks and make guys a little bit more comfortable in this. Because Ime said coming in this year, this isn't a natural defense for everybody, but I do think it kind of reflects this modern sense that you got to keep everything in front of you. If you have personnel that can guard five positions, and the Celtics do have, you know, defensive-minded players across every position here, they've been able to get it down over the last 3-4 weeks or so here, and to the point where their defense has kind of driven them before this Nets game, where they ended up getting blown out, to top three status in that rating, and that was mostly off their defense. You know, even without Jaylen Brown out there, they were a top 10 defensive team through his absence. So, like, in terms of front runners in that sense, you got to look at Marcus Smart, and you got to look at Al Horford. Like, Al Horford's defensive renaissance and him playing, you know, as you can see, I'm a big fan of Al Horford up here. Like, him playing as well as he ever has on the defensive end of the floor. You know, top three in contests, most threes contested in the league this year. Top 5-10 at this point in blocks. I mean, he is just everywhere for their defensive unit right now. Rebounding like he never did with the Celtics in his previous tenure. So that year off with Oklahoma City, which is effectively what it was, has made a big difference on him. And Smart, I think, with Dennis Schroeder playing next to him, has been able to take on a defensive mindset again. And, you know, some of the analytics on him to start this year are incredible, not to mention him just being the pure leader in steals in the NBA on a per-game basis to start this year. So it was interesting. The Athletic ran a piece last year that Horford was someone who Smart missed the last couple of years in terms of holding everybody accountable on the defensive side of the floor. And now to see them two as sort of the head of the snake on that side of the ball in a rejuvenated unit has really been encouraging to watch.
Yeah, that's a great answer. And I guess from what I had seen, I love watching Marcus Smart play defense. He's so intense. He definitely has an attention to detail that I think a lot of other players don't have. And he reminds me, not necessarily of DeJounte Murray. They're obviously very different in terms of their styles of defense or their body type as well. But I think they're similarly intense. They have a lot of attention to detail. They're guys who are pretty versatile, who can guard a few positions. And I'm excited to see these two teams come together tonight, because at least according to B-Ball Index, Derek White and DeJounte Murray have been the third and fifth best wing defenders in the league this year. And at times it's felt like that, but at other times it feels like guys can get where they want against them. I guess like dominant guys, but that, you know, guys like Luka Doncic, they're going to get whatever they want, whenever they want, regardless of who you throw on them. And I think they need a little bit more help out there. You know, I mentioned that they have the personnel, but I don't think that personnel is always on the same page. And they've even stressed out over the last couple of games, like after their last loss against the Hawks here, some of the players were pointing out that the communication has been really bad, that in theory they should be a good defense, but that they're just not communicating. And I think you can kind of see that. There's been guys who've missed rotations. There's guys who are late to rotations. There are guys who aren't really sure where they should be, guys who are getting backdoor cuts. And so I don't know how they improve that. I mean, they're a very young team. Obviously, they need to communicate better. But as far as the vocal leader goes, like a guy like DeJounte Murray stands out, but really nobody else. And I think that's where it differs from the Celtics to the Spurs, where you said the Celtics have a guy like Marcus Smart and they have Al Horford to keep people, you know, held accountable. And the Spurs don't have a ton of vets. Like, this is the youngest roster that's that Coach Pop has ever coached. So I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch as well.
Yeah, like you track this team from the Kawhi trade, and they still had those veterans, like you said, in Aldridge, who Man, I don't know what got into him in San Antonio, in Brooklyn to start this year. Seeing him the other night, like, he really never retired. The way he's able to score and rebound and do all these things, it's incredible what he's bringing back to the table there. And DeMar DeRozan, who I don't think a lot of people saw the years he had with the Spurs, but completely changed his passing game, became a main facilitator and an engine of an offense that he wasn't in Toronto, even though he's a great scorer there. And now you see him, he's an MVP candidate with the Bulls. So you had those guys who kept them in the mix there. Now you're right. Like, it's like, what's here? You have good players. I love those guards you mentioned, White and DeJounte Murray is very popular among the Celtics fans. I think people have been coming up with Murray trades for a few years here with the hold that's been at the Celtics point guard spot. So I do want to get into some of the possibilities of trades between these teams. And it's interesting because the Spurs don't make trades. Like, they don't do that during the year. I can't think of any major deals they've made in the last year, few years period, outside of the Kawhi one and the DeMar DeRozan signing trade that you saw last year. They're pretty content with their roster. I don't know. Yeah, Patty Mills too, going to Brooklyn. I mean, wow, Spurs have just reinvigorated the Nets. But in terms of trades, like, I've been eyeing the Spurs because they do have multiple players and they're hanging in a rebuilding direction, as you say here, that makes a trade enticing. But the Spurs just kind of beat to their own drum. Like, they don't make a lot of trades. They probably have a sense that Pop can raise up this roster over the next coming years, depending on how long he's going to stick around here. And I'm just wondering when that's going to break. Like, at some point, do they look at selling here? Do they look at accumulating picks? Do they look at, you know, doing kind of what the Magic did last year, trading these quality players that could help other teams and just completely resetting? Or are they just going to keep a competitive team here for Pop right through the end and then decide where to go?
Yeah, it's a tough situation with the Spurs. So we sort of have been hinted that Thaddeus Young will probably not be here for the long haul, which makes sense. He's a veteran who should probably be on a competing team trying to help them win. The Suns were interested in him before the year. And, you know, I'd spoken to Dave King, a guy who's a beat writer for the Suns, and he said basically they were only interested in sending Jalen Smith and Dario Saric. Spurs weren't interested. And since then, we haven't really heard a lot, and Thaddeus Young was really only in the lineup when Jakob Poeltl was on health and safety protocol. So I think he's a guy who could be a guy who they would trade away. But in terms of the rest of their young pieces, like, it does feel like they want to keep them and just at least figure out who they are this year before they move on and maybe 100% commit to just wiping the roster and saying, look, we're 4-13. We need a top end talent. We don't have that. And I think maybe they're not sure if they have that. Like, I think for me, it's pretty clear they don't. But I think the Spurs want a whole season where they go, okay, what can DeJounte do in this role? What can Derek White do in this role? What can Devin Vassell, you know, what can Lonnie do in this role? And, you know, whether or not that's the right thing to do, you know, they don't care what my opinion is. But for me, I think it's okay to do, but at least at the trade deadline, be a little more aggressive. Like, if Thaddeus Young isn't playing, you're probably not going to get much for him. You might end up buying out a player for the fourth year in a row. And that's tough. I mean, you bought out LaMarcus, you bought out Pau Gasol, you bought out DeMar Carroll. So I don't want to see another player bought out who potentially could have been moved for something, whether that's a first round asset or a few second round assets. I don't really care, because it's tough asset management when you're not getting anything for guys who you're paying money.
So yeah, and
we'll see what they do.
It makes sense with Aldridge because he was on the big deal, but some of those other guys you definitely would have liked to have gotten something for. Even guys before they left, whether it was DeRozan or Mills in particular, like guys who just end up leaving for nothing. I know that's been a problem in Boston the last few seasons or so here where guys have just walked out the door for nothing. And that is frustrating as you try to maintain talent here. Because I look at the Spurs, you know, they're 4-13 now, losing six straight coming into this one. 1-10 in the conference, which is just really bad. Like, this is the first time, at least in my memory, that the Spurs legitimately look bad. And so that's what kind of makes me take up the trade thing there and that asset management that you speak of, because, like, I don't see a path to them being great this year. They have good players. They don't have that great player that can, you know, just carry you to a quality record or at least a decent record. The depth isn't amazing. Once you do get an injury, like you said, with Jakob Poeltl and health and safety, like, this can really get shaky here for them. And so I just wonder, like, is there anything on the Boston roster that would entice them into maybe sending a player their way with multiple picks coming back. I'm not sure that's the best route for Boston either, because I think they might need their picks at this point. But when you look at other rebuilding teams around the league, they're piling up picks right now. If they're able to flip a Vucevic for two future firsts, Orlando's going to do it. Other teams have taken on that mindset, whether it's the Thunder or the Rockets at this point with the Harden trade. Spurs really haven't been in the business of piling up the picks, and they've done a good job drafting to their credit. You know, Lonnie Walkers, and I like Wieskamp and Primo and some of the guys they brought in this year, and you even go back to those guards. Like, they've done a decent job with the draft, and they just haven't gotten that big fish. You look across the league right now, it feels like every single team has a star or a budding star that they can believe in. Spurs might be the only team that doesn't have one.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, and I know Spurs fans probably don't want to hear that, but I've talked about it all year. Like, DeJounte Murray is a phenomenal player. He's done as much as he can in a role that he's not really ideal for. You know, they've asked him to be the engine of the offense. He has the seventh most touches in the NBA this season. I think he's run the fourth most pick and rolls in the NBA this season as a pick and roll ball handler. And look, he leads them in points, assists, touches, steals, rebounds. Like, he's doing everything he can for them, but it really hasn't been that efficient. I think DeJounte is untouchable for this year. I think what they want to do is, like I mentioned earlier, is just figure out what he can do for a whole year as the engine of an offense. And I think up to this point, you know, he's done as best a job as he can in that role, but it's not a role that he should ideally be playing in. Like, you look at his efficiency, not very good, not super efficient. And I think you can live with that if you have a guy like Luka Doncic, who is fourth in the NBA in touches, but, you know, he's averaging, you know, 25 points per game, 8 rebounds, 8 assists. And he's not just a guy who makes basic reads, who's going to do, you know, basic pocket passes out of the pick and roll. He's a guy who can pass his teammates open. You know what I mean? Like, he's a transcendent passer. He's a transcendent scorer. And DeJounte Murray isn't that. And that's okay. You know, I think a lot of players want him to be that guy because the Spurs are devoid of that right now. But he really shouldn't be forced to do that. He is right now because there's no one else who will do that. But long term, I just don't see how he can be the answer. I mean, it's great that he has 3 triple doubles this season, but they're also 0-3 when he gets a triple double. Like, it clearly doesn't matter that much. And he needs help. Like, if anything, he's going to need help if he's going to be that guy. But I don't believe in him being that guy. But I think in a different context, in a different role, he might look a lot better. So we'll see what they can do. Maybe they land a Paolo Banchero. Maybe they land a Chet Holmgren, or, you know, any one of the players at the top of this draft. But for me, the Spurs' best route towards really entering being competitive for a championship again is just admitting that, look, this is a rebuild and we need to commit to it, because it is a rebuild to the fans and it is probably to everyone else on the outside. But I don't know that the Spurs have really admitted that that's what they're doing, which is fine. You know, Pop's older. This is probably his last year. It's the last year of his 3-year extension. And, you know, they're never going to outright lose.
You think Pop's done after this season?
I think he could be done after this season. I know he had said that once Tim Duncan was done and the big three were done, he was gone. Then they got LaMarcus Aldridge and he said, look, LaMarcus, I will stay here as long as you're here. Now LaMarcus is gone and he's still here. And every single year of the 3-year extension had an opt-out clause. Like, he could just leave if he wanted to and call it quits and we'd never hear from him again. Or maybe he wants to be part of the front office, but every year he's come back. So it feels like this is the end, because there's no real competitive or path to being competitive for a title, in my opinion. But, you know, maybe he decides to stick it out. I mean, he loves DeJounte. He talked about during media day and throughout the season how these young guys have reinvigorated him. And it's been a different challenge and one that he hasn't had in his career before. But to me, it just doesn't really make sense for him to stick around. And of course, he can stay as long as he wants. He brought 5 championships to San Antonio. They were in 22 straight playoffs. So as long as a man wants to be here, I'm not going to push him out the door. But I think for both parties, it probably makes sense to move on this summer. But we'll see what they do. I mean, it is up to him.
Yeah, it's been weird the last couple of years not seeing them be relevant or on national TV or in the finals race. And it's almost like the Patriots on the NFL side missing the playoffs last year. It's like, wait, this isn't real life. I don't know what's going to end up happening with this team, but if I'm Brad Stevens and I call at this trade deadline, I'm like, look, you're out of the playoff race. You're not even in the play-in race. We're looking at Murray. We got all these pieces here in Boston. We got all our future picks. If we wanted to get Murray, what are you asking for?
What do you think, and I'll flip that on you a little bit. What do you think they would be willing to offer for Murray? Because I think a lot of Spurs fans always throw out these trades that are like, okay, well, Derek White isn't playing well, Lonnie aren't playing well, But if we flip them, we could get, you know, we could get a Jaylen Brown or we could get a Carl Anthony Towns. And, you know, that we know that's not how trades work. You're not going to trade guys at the bottom of their trade value for star players. So what is DeJounte worth? I mean, he's been the best player on this team. What would the Celtics be willing to probably give up? Because I think that matters, too. I don't think it would take just a pick. I think it would be a little bit more since he's almost their one of their untouchable players, in my opinion.
Well, I think the main guy, of course, San Antonio is going to ask for Brown. I think everybody asked for Brown, and then it's no. We heard the Ben Simmons thing a couple weeks ago, so that's obviously not in play there. But I think just about anything else outside of Tatum is there. You could go with Smart. You could go with would you do Robert Williams if you're Boston? I'd say I'd lean no, but I could be talked into it. If the pick load's lighter there. But those are obviously the two guys that are going to be first and foremost in value. There's Rob and Smart as the centerpiece. And then you get other guys like Romeo Langford, Aaron Nesmith, Peyton Pritchard. Like, those are going to be the centerpieces of a trade right now for Boston. And that's of value to a young team, a rebuilding team like the Spurs. You know, other stuff like Horford, Schroeder, that kind of thing is probably not going to be as valuable to a team like that. But I think the first thing you offer if you're Boston is Marcus Smart.
Yeah, and I just for that reason, I love Marcus Smart, and I really like Robert Williams if he was theoretically in the trade, but none of those players really do much for San Antonio.
Even both.
Like, I think both of those players, like the Spurs have their starting center who they believe in right now, Jakob Poeltl. Like, I don't think Robert Williams starts over him, and I don't think that putting Robert Williams in the second unit for the money that he's on, not that it's a ton of money, but for the money he's on, like, I don't know that he helps them that much. The Spurs are really in need of shooting. Marcus Smart can shoot the ball a little bit, but he's been fairly inconsistent throughout his career. So they're already guard heavy. I mean, even if you get rid of DeJounte, you still have Primo, you still have Trey, you have Vassell, you have Keldon, you have Lonnie, you have Derek. I mean, Wieskamp is a wing guard. So I just don't see how that helps them that much. And I still think that Smart is good enough to help them win, but not in any meaningful way long term. And I think they want to have their cap space as free as possible. And I think DeJounte Murray is on a pretty fair contract. So again, I just think he's pretty untouchable. Unless they can get something back where they feel like they're the overwhelming winner, I think they're not willing to make a deal. And I think that they've sort of proven that over the years, right? Like, fans and analysts have said, well, you know, why don't you move LaMarcus? Why don't you move DeMar? Why don't you move Patty? Why don't you move Rudy? And the answer is, well, it's not that they haven't listened to deals. They just don't want to say yes unless they feel like they're the winner. And I think that's fair. But at the same time, if you're the overwhelming winner, most of the time the other team is going to say no. So it leaves you at a dead end and you don't get a deal done. So I just don't see it happening.
Yeah. So no Murray, no White. If we do go down to the guys, well, you mentioned one of them and Thad Young, but I also think Doug McDermott could possibly be in that group of guys that's available to other teams around the league. What are we thinking with those guys? The Celtics do have a TPE here that fits all these guys, so they don't necessarily need to send a ton of money back or even match the contract for that matter. So you could theoretically do something like that, Young, for Aaron Nesmith, per se, if you really want to go in that direction, or Romeo Langford, or just one of these young guys who isn't making a lot of money on the roster. Save San Antonio some money for this year or in coming years if you talk about the McDermott thing. And then I know Boston doesn't have a ton of second round picks left at this point with the TPs that they picked up and the Fournier deal, but there might be one second rounder in there that they could possibly end up giving in this thing or do one of those protected first round things. But I know you see Young being involved, but does McDermott end up being available for the Spurs team to other ones?
I think he could be available if they're like really, really bad, but even then, I think he's really helped the young Spurs who are trying to learn how to be the facilitators on this team, right? He's a guy who's one of the best cutters in the league. He relocates really well around the perimeter. He's a really good three-point shooter. And the Spurs have been one of the worst teams from outside the arc, right? So they want to keep guys on this team who still have a veteran presence to some degree and also bring them something of value. And I think that guy brings them something of value. I think Thaddeus Young brings them something of value, but you look at how the rotations have gone. Drew Eubanks, who, you know, love him. He was on my podcast this summer. Think he's a great guy, but being a great guy does not make you a great NBA player. Like, to me, he's a third string guy. He's a guy who's probably great depth insurance, but he's soaked up nearly 20 minutes per game every night. Hasn't been particularly efficient. Doesn't shoot the three ball. Doesn't really shoot from mid range. He's a decent passer, but if you look down the line, I mean, Thaddeus Young, Jakob Poeltl, Jock Landale, they're all better facilitators from the high post, from the elbows than he is. And I think right now you're seeing Pop really loves guys who've been around this team, been in the system for a long time, and they've built what, you know, some people like to call sweat equity. And yeah. So a guy like Drew Eubanks, who I think many people would say is clearly worse than someone like Thaddeus Young, continues to get the minutes and continues to hold on to his role because he's built that sweat equity. He's been through the Austin Spurs. He was a third stringer. He was the backup big. He started and, you know, was a spot starter when Jakob Poeltl was hurt. And so he's earned his role per se, where Thaddeus Young, we traded for him. He didn't earn anything. And he continues not to play when Jakob Poeltl is healthy. And so he could be a guy who is available. And I think he would be moved for a relatively small price. So that would be realistic in my opinion, but I don't even know that they want to take back any guards. But I mean, if it's Romeo Langford or somebody on low money, then sure, I'm sure they would say yes.
What's the value on Young, you think, ultimately? What's the asking price going to be there?
I think when you look at the deal that we talked about earlier from the Suns, where they offered Jalen Smith and a guy like Dario Saric, I think the Spurs were looking for a first round pick. They want to gather picks because one of the things that they did get from the Chicago Bulls in that DeMar DeRozan sign-in trade alongside Aminu and Thaddeus Young was a first rounder that will eventually parlay, I think, by 2028 if it doesn't in 2025. So I think they really want to continue to add first round picks. But at the same time, they're a team that doesn't really make a lot of trades. The last time they made a real trade midseason was Austin Day for Nando DiColo in 2014.
I knew so, it. Like it was nothing in recent memory.
So it's tough to get them to budge. And I think that they're really, they've stuck to their guns because it's what they know and it's what's worked, but you know, clearly it isn't working recently. And I don't think that's all their fault. I think it started with the Kawhi Leonard debacle and they held on until they couldn't hold on anymore. And it sort of altered the timeline. But I think Thaddeus Young is a guy who you could get. So if they want to offer that, I'd be more than happy if they threw in like a protected first rounder, even if it was like a lottery protected. Because I don't see the Celtics being the lottery. To me, they're just too good of a team. They have too much top-end talent to fail like that.
We'll get to that in just a second. I think we failed here because, you know, Young, $14 million, expiring contract. It's a TP fit for sure. Celtics have the $17 million TP. But I don't think they want to go down the road they did last year of taking and expiring on that TP, because then you lose Evan Fournier for nothing at the end of the year, essentially. And, you know, even less of a value in a guy like Young probably for them at 33 with Horford here coming off the bench and not with a ton left in terms of shooting and offensive game. He's a versatile defender and stuff like that, but I don't think he's moving the needle all that much for the Celtics this year. So we hit a dead end with our trade talks here. I do want to kind of get your thoughts about the Celtics going forward. You don't see them as a lottery team anywhere in the near future, which I think is fair. But first, before I trigger anybody, before we get people too angry as we dive into Celtics talk here, I do want to shout out our sponsor, Calm, this season, this Thanksgiving, this holiday year. Can get hectic, or you can just get flat out frustrated with your team. Another bad loss at Brooklyn, down 29. When you end up in that situation, that's when you got to pull the calm out for meditation, sleep, anything you can imagine, yoga, like just all things mental health on the Calm app. That's where you got to go. And we're giving you 40% off this holiday season for a limited time. Calm.com/garden is where you go. Help support the Garden Report as well as Dome Theory here on CLNS Media. And get 40% off a Calm premium subscription. Let's do a little Celtics before we get you out of here, Noah. I know you haven't watched a ton, but big picture this year, ESPN just dropped a story about them kind of being stuck in neutral. We hashed that out the last couple of days. I just put out a story on CLNS Media about that assessment. Some of the things people are thinking league-wide about Tatum and Brown, the isolation play, just sort of stylistically where this team is at and how far they are from contending, which I admit is pretty far away at this point. They've lost so much talent. The East has gotten better. The young guys that they've drafted or brought in haven't developed all that much. So you're ending up in a situation where there's an enormous amount of pressure on Brown and Tatum that you're probably going to see tonight in terms of passing, playmaking, defense, scoring. They got to do pretty much a little bit of everything here. And it's good that they brought in pieces like Schroeder and Horford to lighten that load a little bit. But I don't know, like, does this team have a path back to contention, you think? It's not going to be easy in my mind. These guys are young, so there's a big window here, but they've also lost so much in recent years.
Yeah, that's a really tough question to answer. I think as long as you have the top end talent and someone who's in the same echelon, in my opinion, as like a Trae Young or a Luka Doncic, that Jason Tatum is, in my opinion, like it's a lot easier to build around that than it is to build around, you know, like a DeJounte Murray or a Derek White. And having a sidekick like Jaylen Brown is invaluable. You could argue that Jaylen Brown would easily, by far and away, be San Antonio's best player if you somehow swapped them right now. So having those pieces is important, but I think you also have the other pieces that surround them that amplify what they do, or maybe the things that they're not so good at, they sort of mitigate that. And I guess for this purpose, that's why I sort of thought Thaddeus Young might be a good addition for them, because I know that Marcus Smart earlier in the season, you correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe he said something along the lines of they're still trying to learn how to facilitate and score. Like they haven't really figured out that balance. And, you know, Thad Young averaged a career high in assists last year, like nearly 5 assists per game. He's a really good passer from the elbows. As long as you keep moving, keep cutting, he's going to find you. He's a good screen setter. And so I think he takes some pressure off of Tatum and Brown if you play him out there. Now, of course, he doesn't shoot the ball particularly well. He's pretty much completely abandoned the three ball at this point in his career, but I think he brings other things to the table. But in terms of the Celtics rejoining contention, is just that finding guys who can complement you, make up for your weaknesses. And I don't know that someone like, you know, Dennis Schroeder really does that. It's nice to have another scoring threat, and it's nice to have Marcus Smart, but it just feels like this team doesn't have a lot of depth. And, you know, whether that's in free agency, whether that's, you know, through the draft. And of course, like you mentioned, that hasn't really been that successful for them with guys like Romeo Langford and Aaron Nesmith. But, you know, I think that they're off to a better, you know, a better path towards getting to contention than maybe San Antonio is. So, you know, I would, if I'm a Boston fan, I feel lucky to have Jason Tatum. I feel lucky to have Jaylen Brown, but you know, those players, and I'm not saying they're going to leave. I don't want people to think that, but like, eventually they're going to want to win something, right? They want to win something. So you got to figure out how to put that around them. And I think that's the next piece.
Yeah. And that's coming in the next couple of years here. There's not a massive window. They're both on extensions, but you're going to have to develop something that's close to contending again, fairly quick here. And I don't think there's a shortcut. That's pretty much what I wrote today, is there was a dream of Zach LaVine because of the Tatum connection. There was a bigger dream of Bradley Beal that I think they lined everything up to do here over some short-term considerations. And I don't even know if that's going to be here with the way Washington looks this year. He's always liked it there, and now he has a winner in Washington to lead into the future. So I would cross Beal off the list, at least for now. So you look around the NBA, there's no magic solution unless you're going to trade Brown. And, like, you know, when the team's struggling, I think people start to think about it a little more. But at the end of the day, like, it is tough to trade Brown, right? Like, especially for Simmons. That whole thing was just a joke. But like, even if Towns becomes available, like, do you really make that move to flip, like, one of your stars for another star? And does that really change all that much? Like, in the end, I think it ends up being a lateral move. Maybe it fits better, but it's the amount of total talent in my mind. You know, you need a big three if you're going to try to move the needle in the positive direction there. But the tricky thing for the Celtics is that there's just, you know, we just did our whole trade exercise. There's not a lot that entices other teams to give up a piece that could become Boston's third piece, like Murray per se.
Yeah, and I think that's really tough, like not being able to get that third guy, because, you know, it's something that is pretty common among all trades. It's like, okay, what assets do you have to go get that guy without giving up all of your assets that you like right now? Mm-hmm. And so it's like it's a tough line to walk. And I think even for Spurs fans who do not have a guy like Tatum or Brown, like, they're just looking for those guys. And like I mentioned, I just think Boston has two of those pieces. How they find that third guy, I don't know. Like you mentioned, maybe the draft, maybe a trade, maybe you get lucky. And I think at least for Boston fans, if they're, you know, if they want to be optimistic, having a big market team certainly helps. Because when you think of guys who are disgruntled stars, they typically are driven towards bigger markets by their, you know, by their agents. You got a guy like Anthony Davis who, you know, when he was done with New Orleans, he said, hey, I want to go to Los Angeles. You have a guy like Jimmy Butler when he was a free agent said, man, I love Miami. It's a big market. It's a market in which another superstar, more than one, you know, LeBron and D Wade, they built something there. So you want to, you know, go to a big market like that. And so Boston's a big market. Maybe you find that disgruntled star. And I think it's about being willing to, you know, pounce on that when that happens. Whereas, you know, San Antonio probably doesn't have the same pool. Love San Antonio, my favorite city in the world, but doesn't have the same pool as Boston.
No, but it does. There's snow in the forecast tonight, and that is always a discouraging factor when it comes to Boston. The Knicks, Like, that's the other thing I mentioned in my piece today, too, is like that rising excitement around the Knicks, too, is just such a killer for Boston. Because if you rewind to 2016, like that kind of excitement was going on in Boston. It's what got Horford here. It's what had them in the final three at Durant, which is still crazy to think about looking back at that summer. And then you ended up attracting Hayward and Kyrie and all these different guys. That's in the past now, too. I don't think there's going to be a excitement for a guy outside of Kemba Walker, who clearly had some things that were pushing other teams away from him that did play out in Boston with the knee. So all of a sudden, you're in a situation here where there's just not a ton attracting guys. Maybe they do want to play with Tatum and Brown, but there's not that many positive vibes out of Boston right now. And really, I think what you'll see tonight is like that just... If I had to just describe the feeling around the team right now, it's just kind of like a relief to win. There's not really an excitement. There's not really a passion or driving force off of the wins that they garner. It's like a relief that they didn't lose, on the other hand. Like, and that's what sort of amounts to a 500 record over these last couple of years. So they've been piling up the wins. I think they'll beat the Spurs tonight. I'm sure you agree with that.
Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, yes.
Toronto on Sunday, like, they're piling up these wins against teams that they should beat here. But you go against the Brooklyn, you go against the team like the Bucks, fully loaded, I'd imagine. The Bulls, who manhandled them in Boston a little bit. Like, those are the teams that there's still a sizable, significant gap between the Celtics. But like you said, the thing that I agree most with you is that the hardest part's done here. Brown and Tatum, they're on the roster. Those are your guys. Those are the players that are good enough to win a championship. And they're going to only get better into their mid-20s here, toward like that 26 mark where players usually start to contend for championships. So there's a few years here where they can start to figure this out. It's just going to be tough.
Absolutely. And I just, if I had to say one last thing to you here, it's, man, I really hope that Jalen Tatum does not have 60 points tonight. I hope that we don't see a 30-point lead blown. I hope we don't see that. It was crazy. And I actually enjoyed him scoring like that. I just didn't enjoy it against the Spurs. That was that was a tough one to watch. And I know they did a really good job of keeping Brown under wraps last year, but man, Tatum, 60 points in one game, 25 in the other one, 44.
And they never doubled them. Oh, still amazing to think about.
No. And I think this team is a little bit better equipped to guard him this season, but I also think maybe not as of late, because, you know, Jakob Poeltl is only two games removed from health and safety protocols. You know, Drew Eubanks is going to be in there a bunch of minutes. I think we're going to see Doug McDermott and Devin Vassell on the sidelines. They are not playing tonight, so they're going to have to go really deep into the depth chart here tonight. So, man, I don't see San Antonio winning.
I like Vassell. When I've written my NBA roundup around Boston Sports Journal, like, he's a guy I keep seeing every week with the Spurs. I'm like, there's not a ton to watch here with the Spurs, but this is a guy that just keeps getting better week in and week out. I guess final question I got for you is, you know, you mentioned Tatum, things he did against them last year, and I was there. That was the most incredible thing I've ever seen covering the NBA early on in my career, is that 60-point game. I mean, that was an untouchable record for a couple decades in Boston that he did beat. They didn't call the continuation on that final layup that would have made it an and one in 61. So I think there's like a 60 asterisk there. Like, he really did pass Bird that night. And even my boss, who's a big Bird guy, and Nick Gelso, contends it was a better game than Bird 60. So struggling to start this year. I think a lot of stars around the league are, in Harden, Beal, Lillard. I mean, there's just a bunch of guys. So I don't know if they're struggling with the physicality that's been allowed by the officials. Obviously, free throws are down at an all-time low. Just watching the NBA game this year, do you like it? And do you see it impacting the Spurs in an inordinate way, too? Just the amount of contact and reduced free throws and things like that that different people have talked about around the league to start this year.
Yeah, I've actually appreciated it. I mean, as much as I love seeing high-scoring affairs, I think there's a beauty in defense, like watching guys go to work and not have to worry about someone swinging their arms through or jumping into them. Like, that's sort of annoying. Nobody really likes that. And I understand, like, if you're Harden and the rules allow that in years past, then take advantage of it. But he can't anymore. Neither can a lot of players like Luka or Trey. Like, those guys are also, I think their free throws are down this year. But for the Spurs, not really. DeMar DeRozan was their number one free throw attempt guy last year. He's gone. And after that, it absolutely fell off a cliff. Like, from him to the next guy, it was Keldon Johnson. And now Keldon Johnson is their leader in free throw attempts per game. Not a guy who really got to the rim a ton, did it at a decent rate, about three per game, but everyone else on this roster is pretty, and I want to say this without sounding awful, but allergic to contact. They don't really like contact. They're not embracing it. They're not really seeking it out. So you have guys like even DeJounte Murray, Lonnie Walker, they can get to the rim, but most of the time they'll sky and adjust. They'll contort their body. They'll try to do some acrobatics, and you know, it just makes the finish harder. They don't finish. They don't get the foul, and you know, the team's going the other way. So no, I don't think it's affected the Spurs all that much, but it's been nice to see them be able to be a little more physical on the defensive end, especially with guys like Derek White, who, you know, are pretty physical defensively. So I wish it impacted the Spurs. I wish I could say that, because that means that they're, you know, trying to get to the line, but I think there's a reason that they're, you know, bottom of the league in free throw attempts and free throws made. So
I did forget one guy, Keldon Johnson. That's a legit piece there in terms of playing for Team USA, showing flashes that he has there. I haven't heard a ton about him this year. You know, you think usually guys have that little USA bump, and like I haven't heard a ton on him this year at all out of there.
Yeah, man, I love Keldon Johnson. And I think Spurs fans have this tendency to every single guy who comes through the door is the next, you know, whatever. The next Tony, the next Tim, the next Manu. And I think that's a bad way to look at players. You know, I think with Tony and Manu, you got lucky that the rest of the league wasn't really on that international scouting phase yet, right? You were sort of the innovators and you found them. Like, that's probably not going to happen. Like, for every Manu and every Tony, there's, you know, a George Hill who's a fine player, but you can't build around. Or there's a James Anderson who, you know, sort of a bust, or Olivier Jean-Charles who never makes it to the NBA. So I like Keldon. I think he's really good, but I'm not ready to tell fans that, hey, you know, he's the next whatever. He's been inefficient from mid-range. He is shooting 13 points percentage points below league average at the rim. He's mostly just a standstill shooter from three, and he hasn't really been that efficient except for this season over the most recent five-game stretch. So he's a guy who's pretty limited, and I think if we can look at him in a different lens, just like I say with a lot of other players, like maybe Lonnie isn't the next Manu. Maybe he's like a KCP. Look at them through a different lens. They can be useful in a different role and, you know, be happy with where they are. Because look, Keldon was draft 29th overall. Most of those guys don't even become starters. And he's a starter. He's a legitimate NBA starter. And we should be happy with that. I'm not saying he can't get better, but to expect every single player who comes through here to be, you know, the next big thing, it can be a little bit exhausting.
All right. Next time we talk, we're going to see if we can come to a Keldon deal. We couldn't come to any trades today between the Celtics and Spurs, so these rosters are standing pat. But once we get close to the trade deadline, everything will open up a little bit more in people's mind, I think. He is Noah Magaro George with Pounding the Rock, covering the San Antonio Spurs. Great header. I do have that San Antonio t-shirt. That's my favorite jersey probably in the sport, the alternatives down there with the Spurs. So I definitely am rocking that come summertime. Check out his coverage. Check out his podcast covering the Spurs. And, of course, subscribe to Dome Theory here on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, everywhere you get your podcasts. New Boston Sports Journal, NBA Notebook coming tomorrow, as well as some writing on CLNS Media off of the Celtics-Spurs game once we recap it later. And, of course, join us later for Celtics postgame here live on CLNS Media. Noah, great to meet you. Great to connect. And we'll keep an eye on your Spurs coverage.
Likewise. Thank you so much for having me, man.